Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Voices from the Grid. I am your host, Pink Ranger Brian Massey, and I am joined, as always, by our hosts today. Let's give it up for Blue Ranger Mike
Lindenbaum.
Howdy. How you doing, sir?
I'm upright.
So am I. Let's give it up for your Green Ranger, Ben Taylor.
What up? It's me, your boy.
And as always, our Red Ranger, never changing colors, always unflappable, Sasha Kaplan.
Oh, no, she flaps quite a lot.
Save the best one for last. Thank you, Brian. I'm the one, the only, the ever snarky Sasha Kaplan.
Fantastic. How's everybody doing today?
Well, we're surviving our command center being blown up.
Yeah, that was kind of a big thing.
We survived the movie.
Some dust in the lungs from all of that construction debris.
Yeah, need it. And
I will say this: I survived watching these episodes.
We all did.
This is such a chore.
Yeah, I mean, like. Yeah, and we'll get into it, but like, it didn't help that this was a three-parter.
I'm gonna disagree with you there, but we'll get to that.
Fair enough. Today, for you, the listeners out there in internet land, we are going to be reviewing episodes 1, 2, and 3 of Power Rangers Turbo, Shifted to Turbo episodes 1, 2, and 3. The original air dates for these episodes were April 19th, 1997. April 26th, 1997, and April 30th, 1997, parts 1, 2, and 3 again. It was written and directed by Douglas Sloan, and the brief synopsis here, it's very brief. As the Power Rangers prepare for their high school graduation, Diva Talks plans her revenge on them for destroying Malagor. Notably, these episodes mark the final appearances of Rocky, Zordon, and Alpha 5 as regulars, and we also have the debut of Demetria and Alpha 6. So
yo.
Oh God.
I'm sorry. I just can't get over the fact that these three episodes aired a week after each other and not as like one big premiere, or I guess 4 days apart or 5 days apart or whatever. So that means that like Alpha and Zordon's great secret, he had to wait 4 days to figure out what it was.
Which I believe kind of adds to the whole, like, oh, what's actually going on there as you're watching it as a kid? Like, if you're watching it as it debuts. But, like, we're sitting here watching it, you know, back to back to back to get notes. And it's like, oh, okay. So it's a little diminished. It's kind of like the whole waiting for endgame thing. It's like, what's going to happen?
But anyways. Also, not only that, but it also takes place immediately after the movie, which is, like, 3 weeks or so after the movie hit theaters. So yeah, because the movie came out on March 28th, 1997, and the first episode of Shift in the Turbo came out on April 19th of 1997. So that's about 3 weeks.
Wow. I did not realize that.
Yep.
Okay. Oh, wow. All right.
Well, that's why we get that like recap of what actually happened.
Are we going to get to that?
we are going to get to that. As a matter of fact, I believe that that's going to be my first question here for all of you. So let's go ahead and get into this. So Shift into Turbo, let's go ahead and do that. Now, question one. After the overall length of the movie and the amount of time the Rangers were actually morphed in that movie, which wasn't much, did this three-parter need to be a three-parter? Let's just go ahead and get that out of the way.
Ben, I'll let you go first, and then I'll follow suit, because I think you're going to say the same stuff.
So, even though, and I think I might surprise Mike here a little bit, even though it was very much set up as two distinct stories, you had the graduation storyline, and then you had the Zordon wormhole storyline, I think this did need to be a three-parter, mainly because it wasn't so much about the story of what was going on in the background. It was the story of writing out Zordon and Alpha. It just so happened that was the B plot, right?
Yeah.
It was also a very good three-parter to establish Eva Tox, the way she does things, and just sort of, for as much as we've talked about other stuff, other seasons kind of not going into things with an idea, Turbo is one of the first seasons that actually shows some forethought into what's coming.
I can agree with that.
Well, like, here they kind of had to put some forethought because of everything that happens down the line this season.
That, like, it's not even that. Like, they set up, like, that they set up some much smaller things as well, right? Like, they mention Adam's going to be working at Amusement Park, which is an episode later in the season. They mention Tanya's going to be working at a radio station, which is an episode later in the season. And then on top of that, they realize that in part three, Larago's going to be there. So they have to do the recap to establish who Larago is. Right, like, there's actually some forethought put into setting things up.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think the better question should have been, did the movie need to be a movie?
I think it did, because it also it helped us officially write out Rocky. Like, doing the movie recap was how they. You know, for anyone...
No. I'm not saying that, like, the way that they did the recap and everything. What I'm saying is the actual Turbo Power Rangers movie didn't need to be a movie. It could have just been a two-part episode.
Yeah, but yeah. But it did work. I do agree with all the points that you brought up, but also, in a way, like, with, like, Zordon and Alpha going away, it kind of also foreshadows, especially, and sorry, Brian, but I'm going into your next question here on this one. Because you're asking about them graduating high school finally. It makes sense to also be having them graduate high school, because it also sets the tone of what we can expect moving forward with changes. You know, that Rangers graduating high school represents not just a change for them, but a change of dynamic of how things could be down the road.
Right, but it doesn't, though, does it? It not promises something it never delivers on.
Well,
to piggyback to Ben's question before we get to the next question, or to Brian's first question, I should say, is I do agree with Ben that I think, like, I can see why this is a three-parter, but the issue for me, and I think this is what you were also getting at, Ben, is that I think the focus was sort of all over the place a little bit in these three episodes, which is, like, the first half is, like, them graduating, and then it's like, oh, Alpha and Zordon have a secret. But then it's, so the one thing that's kind of consistent across these three parts is establishing Diva Talks again.
Yeah.
Especially with a new actress, because the original actress, I believe, was on maternity leave or was pregnant and then about to go to maternity leave. So they kind of negotiated that she would be absent for a part of the season and they would bring in a different actress to do that. So that being said, I do think that if we could improve on this three-parter a little bit, I think the focus should have been on, like, graduating at the end. And then the rest of the focus should have been on Alpha and Zordon leaving, because I was like, oh, wow, we're like 2/3 into this and Alpha and Zordon are leaving and the Rangers had no clue.
Yeah. I'd like to talk about that a bit later as well.
Yeah. Talk about that. We will bring that up.
That is to say, this makes sense as a three-parter, but the way they paced it out doesn't.
Yes.
And we've talked about the pacing problems in Power Rangers.
Pacing in Power Rangers? Never.
Gotta get to that Zord battle.
Gotta get to that Zord battle, man. Rubber suit monsters all the way from Japan. My next question, as Mike alluded to, involves the Rangers finally graduating, taking their tassel and putting it on the other side of their hat. The Rangers are all graduating high school finally, sans Justin, obviously. how do you feel? I feel like we might have talked about this a little bit, but how do you feel overall about the Rangers moving into this next stage of your lives? And also, are you upset that Bulk and Skull were not a part of the graduation? Are they even in the same grade as the Rangers? Has that ever been established? Because I honestly can't remember.
They are in the same grade. They shared all the
same classes, so yeah. It sort of makes sense. But the issue here for me is I hate the subplot of turning Bulk and Skull into monkeys. I get why it was done. I still hate it. Yeah. Kind of, you know, from the behind the scenes stuff. I hate it. I absolutely hate it.
So the Bulk and Skull question is an interesting one because they've had a full-time job now for 2 seasons.
So it's about time the Rangers get theirs, you know?
So like they were junior police patrol and then they were like private detectives. So either they graduated a year early, which I find hard to believe.
Very.
Or they were in a year above the Rangers, but yet held back to take the same classes. I don't know. Yeah. Angel Grove High makes no sense. Like, none. But to talk about, and I think I touched on this a little bit, the idea of the Rangers graduating was a very good one. And Mike talked about how with Zordon and Alpha 5 going away, it should have been an evolution of the show. The show should have grown up along with its audience. But it just didn't. The introduction of Demetria just put them back in that same holding pattern. They had someone else to rely on, some mystical nonsense spilling, really bad at their job figuring a bloody fish tank.
But no, Chief's from Inquiris, so now she's there to guide the Rangers so they figure out the answers themselves.
Yeah, Inquiris, because anyway, the point being, this was such a big opportunity for this show that they didn't take, right? They used it as just another sort of, yes, like I said, they do a little bit of setup, like Tanya doing this, the Cat doing that, right? Justin going into high school, which we'll get to. But as we're going to talk about later, there were a few things that got in the way of them really taking advantage of this. Most of it was their writing talent, let's be honest. This should have been a huge opportunity for the show. It should have been a moment where the audience could have grown up alongside the characters, facing life beyond high school, facing adulthood as a parallel to other threats. Like, so they're all the not everything had to be a rubber-suited monster, right? Instead, what we got was Bulk and Skull being turned into monkeys, learning absolutely nothing from it in the long run, right? We got a police lieutenant who retired to run a juice bar. We got the Power Rangers equivalent of Scrappy Doo driving a monster truck and Kit from Knight Rider. We got veteran Rangers being ejected from the series for being too old and having to hand their keys to a bunch of newbies.
Well, then you needed teenagers with attitude. I guess once you graduate high school, you lose the attitude. But yeah, I agree with Ben that the show could have taken the opportunity. But guys, this is the 90s. The idea of a show growing up with its audience, how often did that happen?
Saved by the Bell, Boy Meets World.
So that's, I think, is a little bit different, but fair. But that is to say, it didn't happen very often. I think Saved by the Bell was kind of trash all the way through, but whatever. The point is I think it is a lost opportunity. I don't think they ever realized there was an opportunity to really tell the grown-up stories, at least not to the full extent.
Yeah.
That being said, graduating high school was so long overdue. I was so sick of preschool assignments from Mrs. Applebaum. Like, let's do Hobby Week. And let's write an essay about who we admire. I'm like, yep, that'll help you in college.
So there's a kind of a thing, a phenomena, where each season of Power Rangers is assigned to like a year, right? It's like a year in the life, right? People tend, like, the fandom seem to think that like each season takes place in a year. Mighty Morphin didn't really have that, right? It was all kind of almost contiguous.
How many Christmas specials did we have so far?
Oh god, I don't even know.
Three.
Like, okay, I said, so Mighty Morphin didn't really have that. Mighty Morphin kind of took place over 2 years. Then there was Zio. There's your three Christmas specials.
Wait, Mighty Morphin took place in a span of 2 years in canon?
Pretty much, yeah.
Hold on a second.
There is no breaks at any point in Mighty Morphin. Like, there's no time skips at all in Mighty Morphin. It's just nonstop.
Wait, does this mean Zordon basically recruited a bunch of barely pubescent teenagers?
He basically recruited sophomores.
High school. Okay, see, sophomores, that makes a little bit more sense to me than freshmen, but still, they're not even 16.
Yeah. So what kind of...
Justin. What kind of he's literally 12.
So literally, one of the interesting things is, though, is that according to the actors, when their characters were recruited, like Billy is like 17, and Jason is actually 18, and Trini, I think, is 16. And like, so there's actually different ages of the Rangers. That's supposed to be the legit canon that never ever got explained. Despite all being in the same classes.
Well, and in Dio, we didn't really see Jason join them in high school, so...
Yeah, Jason was...
Jason was in school with them a lot.
Was he? In Dio?
Yeah.
Dang it!
No, not in Zio, but...
That's what I mean. So it would have been something that
like,
would have graduated.
Mighty Morphin. But in Mighty Morphin.
In Mighty Morphin, obviously.
Yeah.
So, Principal Kaplan, in one of these episodes, mentions spending the past 4 years with them.
Yeah.
And this is happening at the very beginning of Turbo. And this is also, like, debuting right around springtime, which is when graduations happen. And Kaplan says, I'm happy to have spent the last 4 years with you. And, you know,
right,
like,
but that also doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so
because, he spent 4 years with most of them. Just not with
Adam
any of the Rangers.
And Rocky.
No, because they were introduced in season two.
Yeah, they came over from Stone Canyon.
But when I say most of them, I mean most of the students.
Oh,
not most of the Rangers.
Yeah, because
the Rangers themselves, literally none of them have been there for 4 years.
Yeah, so with Tommy. The students, it makes sense as part of graduation speech.
Tommy is not at the graduation.
That's right. And Tommy was actually, that's right, because Tommy graduated a year apparently early.
What happened was he got his diploma. He wasn't coming to graduation.
But not only that, but he would technically be 3 years because technically speaking, if Kim, Billy, Jason, and Trini and Zach were there
were
sophomores and were in their second year, that means Tommy would have been 3 years.
What? Anyway. Look, guys, we need to stop finding a timeline in Power, at least in the early seasons of Power Rangers. None exist. It's all wibbly wobbly timey wimey. Like, just accept the things that make no sense, because there is a simple explanation. The writers just ignored it.
Man, I thought the Zelda timeline was hard to keep track of. This is, wow.
I'll take, I don't know if this is better or worse than the X-Men continuity. I think X-Men continuity is still worse. But anyway, Brian, continue.
Okay, so let's move on from what grade are the Rangers in or are not.
super quick. We didn't really answer the Vulcan Skull part. You might have, but honestly, it didn't bother me, just simply knowing the fact that, you know, they got turned into monkeys, and like, how are they going to come to graduations as monkeys?
Yeah, you know what?
Okay, I have my hand up.
Okay.
Can we please stop calling them monkeys? Chimpanzees are apes, not monkeys. That's not how science works.
Okay. Professor Taylor.
Okay. Well, let me just go ahead and skip ahead.
Now, I know the show calls them monkeys, but the show is wrong.
I'm going to skip to my next.
The chimps.
They're chimps. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to skip ahead and I'll come back to my next question. Question four, Bulk and Skull are turned into monkeys. Sorry, chimpanzees. Discuss.
We already did.
My answer is simply no.
Why? No. Hate it.
This was, like, I'm not going to get too much into this, but God, this was such a, like, again, we know why this happened, but this was such a dumb idea.
I know that we know why this happened, just in case someone listening doesn't know why it happened. Would you care to enlighten us, Brian, while I got an answer my door?
Absolutely. So, if I'm remembering this correctly, please feel free to comment or send an angry message if I get this wrong. But they were developing a spinoff Bulk and Skull series for Fox. And so they needed the actors to be able to, like, shoot the pilot. And we have never seen anything from that pilot, but this is why all of a sudden our favorite duo, the real heroes of the show, are suddenly about, I don't know, like 2 foot off the ground and covered in hair and craving bananas.
So it's a little bit of that. So what happens is at the end of Zio, Bulk and Skull talk about going to Europe, right?
Yes.
So I guess in between seasons, they had shot a pilot. The pilot didn't get picked up. And then the writers of the show didn't know what to do with Bulk and Skull because they hadn't planned on doing anything with Bulk and Skull because they were supposed to get their own spinoff. So this is why we got what we got.
That's a little better of an explanation than I think had.
That's what I remember. Mike, do you remember anything different?
Not really, honestly. And I think Schreier was also going into other projects as well. I think he was trying to do more behind the scenes.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Which is also why, and I think Jason was trying to do more behind the scenes as well, because they still did the ADR for their characters when they're as chimpanzees. So, like, they're still technically there.
Yeah, well, and I know Jason would eventually be going to college, like, right around, like, Lost Galaxy, but, like, that's still a ways off. But I think at this
we're
point,
not there yet. We're not there yet. Future.
So, but yeah, it was dumb, and but it is what it is. Going back to another question. So Carol Hoyt takes over as Diva Talks from Hillary Shepherd in the first half of the series, going from episodes 1 to 35 before Hillary Shepherd returns. Was this noticeable to you at all? And if so, who do you think is better in the role just based on the first two things that we've seen, the Turbo movie and this three-parter?
No, OG Diva Talks all the way. I'm sorry. Actually, I'm not sorry.
So I definitely think that Carol does a good job of trying to mimic the mannerisms that Hillary introduced in the movie.
But it's clear she's mimicking. It's not natural.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's clear that very she's mimicking. Noticeable. And there's also certain physical differences to the two actresses as well on a visual viewpoint. So, like, you can kind of tell that they're slightly different people at the same time, too.
Yeah. Like, the mask and the costume do a lot of work, but it's still noticeable.
Oh, my God, boys. I think for me, the thing is that it was very clear she was trying to do what the original Diva Talks was doing, kind of, again, like Mike said, mimic those moves and stuff like that. But it was very clear those things didn't come naturally to her. I think she does get slightly better as, you know, she gets more used to the role. But she still can't quite mimic Hillary's, like, emotional, like, visceral, like, expressions. And that, I think, is really what sets the two Diva Talks apart. So I definitely prefer OG Diva Talks.
OG Diva Talks is the way to go. Yeah. Like, you got Diva Talks and Diva Talks Light, and I'm going to choose, like, regular Diva Talks the whole time.
Light's the same. It's more of, like, a decoy Diva Talks.
There's just kind of a gravitas that Hillary Shepherd has when she's playing Diva Talks that Carol Hoyt just doesn't have.
Especially the stuff that Hillary does with her voice when she gets really, really angry, and how it, like, shifts from, like, high pitch to deep and back again. Like,
Yeah.
That was really good.
I'm going to disagree with all three of you.
Okay.
Mainly because I've watched the Turbo movie exactly twice. I've watched all of Turbo at this point exactly once. I've seen Carol perform Diva Talks more than I've seen Hillary perform Diva Talks. So this would probably be a question for me to answer in the finale, because I'm not as familiar with the other actress as I am with Carol. However, I will say I really enjoy, like, I don't think any Diva Talks is bad Diva Talks. Like, I've gone on record quite clearly as saying Diva Talks is my favorite villain from the Zordon era. I love the fact that while she can be a little over the top, I like that. It's a series that doesn't take itself entirely seriously. And I think a lot of that is rolled off of the back of whoever is playing Diva Talks at the time. Diva Talks has a lot to answer for. She's very much the prototypical hot Power Rangers villain that eventually turns good. There is literally one in every season after this. It just, but I know, I just love me some Diva Talks. I don't care who's playing her. They both do a great job. And I think Carol's great.
I mean, I'm not saying that Carol was bad. I still enjoyed watching Carol, but I just felt that Hillary was better. But that's just me, you know.
I mean, fair.
Bash has got a look on her face. Like, really?
No, you're fine. It's just my normal, I'm judging the three boys I do this podcast with face.
Right, but why?
No reason, just because.
Okay. Okay, then. Keep your secrets.
She's plotting our demise.
Yeah. Not much plotting required, Mike. Really.
Okay, man. So let me see here. What's the next question I've got for y'all? Yes. So moving on. Tommy. This is going to be a Tommy question, because of course this is the Tommy Oliver show featuring the Power Rangers at this point still, which thankfully we'll get out of eventually. But Tommy, since becoming the Red Turbo Ranger, has taken an interest in NASCAR apparently. Is this a good fit for him narratively, or is it just weird? And as another aside, is this a case of the Sentai getting in the way of the story? Because Car Ranger.
Well, one of the things that I remember about, or I read about this Sentai, and please correct me, Brian, is that this was meant to be kind of more of like a spoof parody series of Power Rangers. So I think that gets more in the way of the story than anything else. I don't care. I mean, we've talked about how much I love Tommy's character and how much I care about his narrative trajectory. So I will say that I really don't care whether he's a race car driver or an archaeologist or a paleontologist, which he will be eventually. So I don't care. What I think is awesome is how little he is in this three-parter.
We'll get to that.
So I have no problem with him suddenly wanting to be a race car driver. This is like when Cat wanted to be a fashion designer. To me, it's like just one of the many thousands of things that the Rangers are into in a given week. I do think it's interesting that this becomes sort of the plot for Tommy for the rest of his time on in Turbo. So it's, but yeah, I'm okay with like how little he is in this.
Everyone's got to have a gimmick. So, I mean, nice. There's really not much I can say. I mean, it's like the, you know, they're graduating, they got to do something, and he decides to skip college and become a race car driver, you know?
But then doesn't skip college and becomes a paleontologist.
We'll get to that when we get to that. But for right now, he's skipping college to become a race car driver.
I don't need college. Vroom, vroom.
Actually, wait, I'm so sorry. As an aside, has anyone mentioned college?
Nope.
No.
So, because Adam's going to be working at an amusement. I mean, I get like plans for the summer kind of thing, but then Kat talks about helping freshmen at the high school. And I'm like, wait, but none of y'all overachieving 5,000 extracurricular activity nitwits are going to college? What was the point?
So Adam does specifically say that his plans are for the summer.
That's true. Yeah.
Which leads me to believe he does have other plans. But so Tommy.
And we should note that there is a caveat that it says in this question for number 5, ask Ben last.
that was a more of a reminder than anything.
Yeah. I have buckle up because this answer's going places.
All right. Fantastic.
So first of all, is it a good fit from narratively? Is it just weird? Is it the Sentai get in the way? Kind of 6 of 1, 6 of 2 of the other, really. I like the fact that it somewhat gives the impression that the turbo powers had an effect on Tommy, that he decided to go out and start doing it a bit more. However, I am absolutely convinced that this was a way for the production team to be able to get JDF to do some filming that would be incredibly repetitive, that they could reuse in episodes going forward so that he would not have to be on set.
That makes sense.
So, Sasha mentioned just how little Tommy's in this episode. Go back and rewatch this three-parter. Specifically, the third part.
Yeah, he's like in it.
At no point in the first two episodes is Tommy seen on screen with any other Ranger. In part three, he's seen in a single one-shot in his Ranger outfit. There is a one shot, where you can see JDF's face where he stood with all four other Rangers. So when they're looking at the screen going, well, Elgar's heading into town, let's shift into Turbo. There's then a single, less than a second, two shot with him and Kat, and the same with him and Adam. Every other time you see Tommy, it's from behind.
Yep.
You can't see his face.
Yep.
Or it's from above and you see the top of his head.
There's really evident in like towards the end when they're all standing in a circle.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this would be a time for Tommy to say something about Zordon leaving or any of the emotional capability. I'm like, oh no, that's just a stand-in.
Yeah. There's even a moment where Tommy is in the room. Tommy is in the room and they have to do the back to action call.
And Tanya does it.
Now, we know that JDF was intent on leaving the show. We know that there are 2 or 3 different stories about the rest of the crew, right? But we do know that most of them were just told they were leaving. I feel there may have been a little bit of resentment there. But when you know to look for it, it is quite clear they're doing the same thing with JDF that they did with Austin St. John, that they did with Tree Trang, and they did with Walter Jones.
Yep.
Right? It's very, very clear. Because we know that Tommy didn't even want to, JDF didn't even want to be in Turbo. They talked him into coming back in order to give them time to hire new actors. Right?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure if anyone saw the interview that I did with Wendy Lee back in October at DerpyCon, but she was actually one of the people that was helping produce the show, as well really? As being the voice of Scorpina and several monsters. And she actually said that, you know, for Johnny and Jason both said at a convention appearances that they found out through a casting call that their roles were being recasted. Whereas Wendy actually said in the interview that I did with her that they were actually doing contract negotiations.
Mm-hmm.
And so they couldn't come to a new contract, which is why we get what we end up seeing like in the midway point of the season. So it's like, it's kind of a, which one's the real one? Is it really a contract negotiation? Because it wasn't just the individual people doing contracts on their own. It was them as a group negotiating a contract.
Yeah.
So, and then obviously as a group casting call to bring in four new people.
And we know, but we also have had, I think it was Johnny Young Bosch was saying that he wasn't really given a choice when JDF decided he was going to leave.
Yeah, I think so.
It really sucks.
I mean, we have to remember that for various reasons, like they're like, if Johnny and, you know, JDF were on a panel together, they're not going to talk about how, you know, they're going to keep things cordial and keep it light. They're not going to say, oh yeah, JDF wanted to leave and I basically got the can. Cause like, that's not like best for fans. And then
there was a point where they knew the other Rangers were leaving. And they had to talk them into staying for 19, 20 episodes so they could hire new actors and write them in. They did a really bad job of writing them in because they just dropped them in a two-parter and it was awful.
We'll get there.
But it is incredibly clear. Because at first I was like, I'm holding off JDF in this episode. And then it's just started to occur to me that they're doing exactly what they did with Jason, Trini, and Zach. And when I started looking for it, I was like, it's true?
I think one of the things that works for this three-parter is that, I don't know about you guys, but I didn't really feel Tommy's absence all that much. Like. No. I think, in fact, his absence works for the benefit of the other Rangers because we're able to see more of them, especially Adam, which like we've talked how he kind of got a little bit shifted to the background with, you know, less lines, less things to do. What was that, Brian?
I'll get to that here in a second.
Okay.
But
I will say to Sasha's point about paleontology, I did the math. So in Dino Thunder, he has a doctorate in paleontology from MIT. Yeah, because that's where he met Haley. And he has his teaching certificate, which is about 7 years of education, which would have put him starting MIT in 1997, the year Turbo happens. So he's not a race car for very long. He's not a race car driver for very long.
No.
Wait a minute. Did Tommy get his PhD or just his undergrad at MIT, though?
He specifically has a doctorate for MIT.
Really? That is so weird. Okay, all right. We'll talk about that when we get to Dino Thunder.
Yep. Maybe when he, like, gave up the turbo powers, like, the passion to drive.
Oh, no. It's Tommy Oliver. I could give less of a heck.
He played football for like a second. Like, so they can, you know, like the Rangers.
Remember how Tanya was so good at baseball last season?
Yeah. Where's that gone? While we're on the subject of Tommy, I'll just go ahead and get into another Tommy centric question. And Ben, this one is actually kind of meant towards you, but I also want to gauge everybody else here too. So Tommy, while he's out there, you know, doing the NASCAR stuff, driving around the lap and turning left really hard, gets a call from Zordon.
Stock car racing, not NASCAR racing.
I know. He gets called on by Zordon to stop driving and help Adam, who's in the middle of a fight in episode one. Not Kat, who's a diver. Not Tanya, who never trained how to fight. And not Justin, who was a whole ass kid. But Adam, a martial artist and a ninja. Ben, how much did this piss you off?
All right, you ready for an interesting answer?
Hold on, let me grab my Dr. Pepper strawberry and cream. I'm ready. Let's go. Okay.
I wish I had that.
It didn't. All right, so as an Adam fanboy, yeah, sure. Me. However, right? Overall, it didn't, right? Because there seemed to be a similar amount of Piranatrons at the power station and where Adam was, right? Mm-hmm. And you already had three Rangers at the power station. You did not need Tommy there as well. You should be able to trust three morphed Rangers to beat eight Piranatrons in a fight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tactically, it made all of the sense in the world to send Tommy to Adam, because you present an overwhelming force on one flank, you collapse that flank, and then you sweep in with your overwhelming force to relieve your holding force, which would have been Tanya, Kat, and Justin. And as much as we dislike Tommy, it is proven he's a very good fighter. So you send Tommy to aid Adam, they absolutely take out, and then they come in and sort of relieve the other three, right? Now, let's be clear. Yes, Kat is a diver. Tanya's never had any formal fight training. But they've also been Power Rangers for 2 years.
That's right.
They've had their fair share of on-the-job experience. And we just seen Justin beat Elgar in a one-on-one fight unmorphed.
I mean, it is Elgar, though.
It doesn't matter. Justin's 12.
Yeah, but Elgar's not exactly king of the Machine Empire, you know what I mean?
Right, but
Justin hasn't hit puberty yet.
It's not the point. Like, Justin didn't even need to morph to beat Elgar. So why are we now worried about him when he is morphed? Is more the point. It wasn't pointing fun at Elgar. Because
but we can.
The whole Elgar thing, right? He gets beat up by an unmorphed 12-year-old. How are we at any point supposed to think he's a threat?
We're not. He's a buffoon.
But they do present him as a threat.
I mean, he's a threat in the same way that, like, the Piranatrons are a threat.
He's a threat in the same way that Squat and Babu are a threat.
Squat and Babu never directly engage the Rangers in combat.
He's like Sprocket.
Like, it's okay to have a comedy character. Like, look at Rito, right? Comedy character. But when he fought the Rangers, he whooped that ass, right? So you saw him as a threat. Elgar gets beat up by an unmorphed 12-year-old.
I'm wondering,
anyway,
if, like,
back to the actual story. But no, it surprisingly enough, it didn't annoy me at all. It made tactical sense.
Okay.
It might be the only good tactic Zordon has ever shown. And then he leaves.
He got the one, and then he dipped. He was just like, all right, I'm good.
Everybody gets one.
All right, peace. I'm outie. Going back to Eltar.
Everyone else can talk about that scene now. I'm done.
No, you got it. We good.
Anything else we need to say?
Yeah, no. That
we got
was...
it.
Hey, Brian, go to question six.
All right, fantastic. Okay, so episode one recaps the Turbo movie and also lets us say goodbye to Rocky. Do you think we needed the recap, or that the season opener could have/should have spoken for itself?
I say yes, for the simple fact of there were probably still a lot of kids who could have not seen that movie going into the season opener.
Yep.
And so it's a great way for anyone who did not see the movie to get a quick run through of how they got these new powers and why they're not the Zeo Rangers and stuff like that, and how Rocky got hurt and all that other stuff, and how Justin came into play.
But I don't think they show Rocky getting hurt in the
ring. Oh, yeah, that's right. They don't show him getting hurt, but they allude to the fact that he got hurt, which is what led to Justin. Yeah.
Like, if anything, for me, it was
very interested if you showed that recap of the movie to someone that's never seen the movie, if it would make any sense to them.
It wouldn't.
Because there is no context provided to any of it.
It's not even like...
I'm sorry.
Brian, please.
If anything, for me, if I was a kid and I was like seeing this recap and for whatever reason, as a kid, I didn't realize, there's a Power Rangers movie that's in theaters I should go see right now. Maybe this would incentivize me to be like, hey, mom, can we go to the movies? I got to go see something. You know, maybe I don't know if it was still in theaters by the time that Turbo debuted on TV. But I feel like,
Probably was, because back in the day, movies stayed in theaters a lot longer than they do today.
Yeah.
Because movies now are about 2 months, and back then, movies used to be about 3 to 4.
Anyway, yeah. I would say... So, the recap itself, I think it needed a little bit more, like, at least, like, maybe one or two sentences of dialogue to really explain to the audience what they're seeing. Instead, we get these, like, really bizarre clips of like, yes, them shifting into Turbo, okay, but then they're on a pirate ship, then they're in a quarry, and there's like fighting, and we see like Tommy's hand rescuing someone. Like, we know it's Jason. The audience doesn't really know it's Jason.
You never see Austin St. John or Amy Jo Johnson's faces in the recap.
So the recap itself doesn't really explain what the heck happened. The only thing we get, like, oh, they have new powers now.
I think that was kind of the bigger deal, was just kind of explaining how they got the new powers more than anything. Which
Ziva Talks technically gets her own introduction in this three-parter. So, but to go back to, is this episode covering how they wrote Rocky out, or is that a different question?
This essentially is how they wrote him out.
Okay. I think the biggest like jab for me that I think is unfair, even though we've made fun of Rocky since his introduction, is the fact that in the command center, Alpha made a cake for the Rangers, and Rocky won't get to have any.
Yeah, that really kind of bugged me too, just because it's like everybody like kind of says, "Oh, we have to go to the command center. See ya, Rocky." Like, and I'm like, past Rangers have been allowed to go back to the command center before, haven't they? Like, I don't know. Like, maybe. Well, I don't know. It just reeked of like.
Yeah, because Jason went in there when he wasn't a Ranger.
You know, yeah, because like, Tommy brought him in. Yeah. So, like, why couldn't he have come back for cake?
Yeah, like, and no cake for
you.
He got
in and out of the command center when he wasn't a Ranger. Like, come on.
Which is a shame, because Rocky just wants to have fun. Rocky just wants some cake,
especially when he can open the door.
Oh, that's why Rocky couldn't make it into the command center. Can find the door.
Yeah.
Also, but yeah. I feel like I'm trying to find a way to express this without saying bad words. I feel like Rocky got the short end of the stick, right? In the movie, a thing happens and he hurts his back. If you want to know our opinions on what happens in the movie, go listen to the movie episode. And then here, he's just sat there getting told a story. And then he graduates, and we never see him again.
Well, we briefly see him at the graduation when he's sitting with the rest of the cast.
He graduates, and then we never see him again.
I think at the end of part one, we see him at the juice bar with the others. But then when we transition into part two, he's gone.
Right, but they don't graduate till partway through part two.
No, I thought it was the end of part one.
No.
No. Graduation's not to like.
Graduation's towards the end of part two. And then they have like a little 2-3 minute thing after the graduation that sets up the wormhole, and then part three is the wormhole stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I guess we see him partially through part two.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's his what I'm saying is
we don't even get a moment of like we don't even get a moment of him saying goodbye to Zordon. We don't get a moment of him even being told that Zordon is gone. We don't get a moment of like,
which is weird because it's like when you look at, even though like Austin St. John, Twee, and Walter had already been sent, technically gone from the show, their stand-ins were able to give their characters kind of a send off, you know, with Zordon and Alpha. You were able to get it with Billy for better or for worse. You're able to get it with Kim, you know, so it's like, all these others were able to get these send-offs, and then, like, I agree, you know, Rocky does get the short end of the stick because he doesn't get that same level of respect.
There's also this moment where Justin's like, man, I can't believe you don't want your powers back. Being a Ranger is cool. And Rocky's just like, oh, I got plenty to do with my karate school. And I'm like, dude, just graduated high school. How do you have a small business loan already?
There's a very simple explanation.
Well, no, he was part of the karate school in the movie, and so he was working.
But he specifically says it's his karate school.
Do you think that was Steve Cardenas breaking kayfabe?
Maybe.
That was probably what it was. He was just like, I'll tell you what I'm actually really doing over here. If you guys want to go over, check out my school, you know. Here's a business card, but like it sucks to me because, like, you know, you've got people like Billy again, like I said, like you have Rangers who aren't Rangers anymore, but like they were still able to go into the command center, and like even if it's just like this three-parter where yes, Zordon saying goodbye, Alpha saying goodbye, like you would think like Rocky's been a part of this team since season two, like he would want to say goodbye to Big Floating Head, you know, he would want to say goodbye to Zordon. He would want to say goodbye to everybody.
Especially because of the stuff that they keep harking is like, once a Ranger, always a Ranger. So I guess that only applies to everybody except Rocky.
But then yet again, Zordon could just be very disappointed with Rocky because he kind of yeeted himself over the top rope of a boxing ring and hurt his back. And he was like, nah, I don't need that.
Right. But I don't think so, because like, remember when Kim got sick and Zordon was like, no, stay and rest, we'll handle it, don't worry about it, until they couldn't.
That time that Kim like fell off a balance beam and decided to go be a gymnast.
Yeah, like Zordon never resented anybody for leaving, so I don't think that's the issue. I think they just like didn't bother to care.
There's a whole lot in this this three-parter that is
even rushed. You forgot it was a three-parter.
That is rushed. Rocky's exit is rushed. Zordon's exit is rushed. It's literally like 45 seconds. Like this big mentor figure that we've been building up for four seasons, just gone in like 45 seconds.
It just feels like the creators were in such a rush to like establish a new status quo, and like there were like different stop gaps of like, oh, well, we can't do this, but we can do that. And like,
yeah, just.
Yeah.
There's also like, there's also this sort of like fake sort of tension that's built up about Zordon and Alpha having this secret. Right.
Yeah.
It's the same thing that happened when they were making the White Ranger. Right?
Yep.
Just tell people what's going on.
Nah.
Just say to the Rangers, hey dudes, Larigo said he might be able to send me home to Eltar. I'm going to look into this. Prepare yourselves. This could be an emotionally fraught time.
Nah.
What they're actually going to do is traumatize these kids by the only actual father figure they've ever had, leaving them within 45 seconds.
No, that's not a great father figure.
They certainly don't have parents.
I'm going to the store to... Rangers, I'm going to the store to get cigarettes and milk. I'll be right back.
Oh, damn. You really had the Nelson Muntz them, did you?
Yeah. Cracky's absence was bad.
I agree.
I actually felt Rocky's absence more than I felt Tommy's.
Right?
Because it didn't feel fair, but like that, I honestly would probably chalk this up to like Steve Carradine just being like, you know what, I'm out, and like the director is probably just being like, can we get you for like one episode? And he just goes like, fine. Like I feel like that's kind of probably what happened behind
the
scenes.
If that is the case, then they could have literally done anything to establish the need for his absence in the series. It could have been something like, you know, I've had this trip planned. I have to go now. You know, my parents are expecting me to join them in Paris, whatever it is, to at least explain a bigger absence so that he's not there when Zordon, you know, drops the ball. Or a line of like, oh my gosh, I have to tell Rocky. Like something very small that doesn't take up a lot of, you know, bandwidth of the episode to like something.
I agree.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, I completely agree that like Rocky's absence was felt way more than Tommy's in this episode. Moving on, this is just kind of a fun one for me. Do you have any favorite lines of dialogue in this series of episodes? Because my personal favorite is they couldn't find pointy ears at a Star Trek convention, which implies that Diva Tox's planet gets Star Trek reruns. And also that Diva Tox is a nerd.
Which only makes me love her more.
That is the only... I saw that line and I had to pause it. I just said, wait, did they just make a Star Trek reference?
I have two lines that I really liked. One was when Elgar was taking on Justin when he was unmorphed. And he pulls out his like his thing that turned Vulcan's skull into the monkeys. And he turns it into a playing card sword.
Yeah.
And he goes... like this is how like the card slices it or something like that. It was
it's
like
time for the cards to cut you.
Oh yeah, it's time for the cards to cut you. And it was like one that's very pirate like, but also very I just like the cards pun with the sword. It was great. But the one that really did it for me was right after Bulk and Skull turned into monkeys and or chimpanzees. Sorry, Ben. Sorry. Don't hurt me, sir. Bulk grabs the walkie-talkie off his uniform and he's trying to call for help. And we hear him as Bulk and Skull, but everyone else hears him as chimpanzees. And so you have these two officers in a car and they're hearing the chimpanzee noises through the speaker or the radio. And the one officer goes, nah, it's just some kids playing around. Nothing ever happens on this ship. Wait, are you new to Angel Grove? Do you know what's going on here? Have you not been here when monsters have attacked this city? Come on now.
That's like, not their department. Their department is to sit in the car and stop traffic. I don't know.
We are not in the giant monsters division of the Angel Grove Police Department. Thank you, sir.
But they would know totally. About it, though.
Maybe they're new. They transferred in from Coast City.
Giant monster alarms. I mean,
like nothing ever happens on this ship. You obviously have never been in the Angel Grove. Anything can happen.
Or maybe they're
constantly
like, maybe they're just on the day shift of the abandoned warehouse district. You know, so.
Yeah.
So I didn't have a whole lot of standout quotes for this episode. The Star Trek one like hit me in my Star Trek fandom. And the fact that Diva Tox is such a nerd just makes me love her even more. Like,
I mean, it's a pretty awesome little like detail about her.
The one thing that did bug me since Mike brought it up is Elgar has this gun that turns people into monkeys. Sorry, chimpanzees.
And we never see it again.
Monkeys in the show. And he has a Justin in front of him that he knows is a Power Ranger that hasn't realized he's there yet. And rather than just shoot Justin in the back and turn him into a chimpanzee, he turns it into a sword and fights him.
Elgar's not exactly the sharpest monster in the box.
Yeah.
This is becomes even more evident next season, but yeah.
Well, I also kind of see it in a different perspective. It's like Elgar probably sees, because Elgar knows Bulk and Skull from the movie.
Yep.
So he knows that Bulk and Skull aren't really a threat. Whereas with Justin, he knows is a Power Ranger, and he would probably go head on more battle him, knowing that he can fight Justin. Whereas with Bulk and Skull, he could play around.
If you knew someone was a threat and you had to drop on them and they didn't know you were there, just shoot them.
He knew Justin was there because Justin was trying to wrangle back in Bulk and Skull.
Justin didn't know he was there. Justin was looking away from him.
No, but the thing is, though, is that Justin knew he was there. Because he was watching him around the corner, but he was trying to, but because he had Bulk and Skulls, the chimpanzees with him, he was trying to wrangle them. So he exposed himself to him
first.
Before, like, there's a scene where Elgar's standing there, he turns, and then Justin turns, and that would have been the perfect moment to shoot him. But Elgar is a nitwit. Maybe, I don't know, maybe this is like Serpentera and it ran out of blue spray juice.
Yeah, it ran out of double A batteries.
He hit the wrong button. He, instead of hitting the
change, it turned into a sword.
The chimpanzee monster, he hit the sword button instead.
Yeah.
Sure.
Oh no, not the sword button. Anything but the sword button. I just, as a quick aside, I have to wonder too about this gun and if somebody in the prop department or somebody who was writing this had seen the Super Mario Brothers movie.
The one with Chris Pratt?
No, the one in '93.
I know.
I'm going to go watch the '93 Super Mario Brothers movie now. Thanks.
Said no one ever.
I have it on DVD and I love it. And
I
it's
like
great.
That movie.
What and ever.
I like it too. Because
it's so cheesy. But, it's so good.
Anyway, different podcast, guys.
Monkey. even Dennis Hopper.
I will
in that
say
movie.
That I'm pretty sure that Bulk in this episode tried to find every possible way of saying the word bananas that he possibly bananas. Could.
We need to find bananas. I love that.
I'll be right back.
Yep.
Okay. Right. I was gonna ask another question and let's see. Okay, I will bring this back around because I feel like already talked about this, but I wanted to get you guys' question on this as well, and then it'll lead into my like final questions. Alpha and Zordon act weird when Justin comes back to get the Turbo Navigator to help find the bomb in the power plant. And we're told as the audience that the time will come to tell them soon enough. It's revealed that Zordon and Alpha are leaving for Eltar, never to return. How do you feel about this major departure? I feel like we've already talked about this, but if you had anything more that you wanted to add to this.
I mean, outside of the fact that it was anticlimactic because of how
rushed it was,
quickly it was put upon us, but also the fact that, you know, it does kind of stink in a way because, you know, this all the way up to the end of In Space is literally called the Zordon era. Yeah. So you would always assume that you'd have Zordon there. But I guess it's also kind of like what I said at the beginning of the episode. It's like it kind of is ushering, you know, the departure of Rocky. Now the news that Zordon and Alpha are leaving, it kind of ushers in that sense of actual change is coming. So,
yeah, because seeing Rangers leave is not new to those that have followed the series thus far. But losing a mentor, however useless he might have been at times, honestly, not gonna lie, Zordon leaving, don't care. But why does Alpha have to go with him? Why can't Alpha stay?
Because Alpha is his main droid, you know?
He can find a new droid. I'm sure they have robot facilities on Eltar. But I think for me, losing Alpha hit way harder than losing Zordon.
Yeah.
Because, like, one useless, trading in a useless mentor for another useless mentor is eh. But losing a very fun and sweet droid for Alpha 6.
I mean, also in a way, like, Alpha 5 was like, I'm going to use the yin to the yang thing, because, like, Alpha 5 was the yin to Zordon's yang. You know, Zordon was, like, the mentor, but at the same time, Alpha was really the more compassionate one that was kind of there for the Rangers when Zordon wouldn't be there for the Rangers.
Let's be honest. Zordon was daddy, Alpha was mommy.
Yes.
Yeah. Zordon was, go ask your mother. Aye, 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 Rangers, like, come here. It's everything's fine.
I mean, Alpha baked them a cake, guys. Come on.
Very sweet.
Alpha also bakes.
Alpha also kidnapped children for a Christmas special that we never went over on this show.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Never happened. Doesn't exist. Yeah. I think in a lot of ways, I think Zordon leaving makes sense. At the same time, he actually later comes back briefly, but he does. So it's like, and I think, like, it's been so long since I've rewatched these, and I haven't watched the rest of the season yet, obviously, because we're recording the opening. But I remember Zordon does get name dropped, I think, a few times over the course of the season.
He gets name dropped quite a bit.
So we can talk about that when we get there. But there is, like, the emotional weight of losing Zordon is kind of lost. Because, like, oh yeah, BT Dubs, guys, I'm leaving now. Peace.
Deuces. Like, okay, what? Like, what just happened?
And, like, there's a little bit of tension of, like, oh no, Alpha and Zordon might not make it. But, And instead, we get this mentor who's not even really get an introduction. It's like, oh yeah, hey. Yeah. But we'll get there.
Yeah, that's actually going to be my next question.
As to Zordon and Alpha leaving, I can see what the others are saying about it being the word I'm looking for, an attempt at, like, moving the show onward. But I've covered my thoughts on this already.
Yeah.
The fact that it doesn't. I feel that I didn't care, right? I just didn't care, to be honest, in the long run. Even when I watched it the first time, I didn't care, because I already knew that he came back in space, right? Like, that had been spoiled for me. So I was just like, whatever, I don't care. What actually annoyed me more was, again, what annoyed me was the fact that they didn't let the Rangers have to go it on their own. That they just instantly replaced him with another person in a fish tank.
Which, like, I guess you could argue the Rangers did need someone full-time in the command center on the upkeep and stuff like that. But at the same time,
alienated David Yost.
Put him in
Rocky.
So yeah, that could have been, like, anybody. But I agree that having the Rangers, like, be on their own without a mentor is something we're gonna see later. But here there's just an opportunity for it that they don't take. Maybe because they didn't see the show growing with its audience the way we do. Which is very likely.
No, it's not even a thing about having them grow with the audience, right? It was just, it would have been something different.
Yeah.
The whole point of taking Zordon and Alpha away was to shake up the status quo. literally 15 seconds later, there's a new alpha that's incredibly sort of racist. And there's a new Zordon. So the status quo is absolutely the same.
I think the best way, and we're already, we're not even like halfway into this season, but I think the best way to describe Turbo.
Did you say we're not even halfway into the season? We're three episodes in.
Yeah. The best way to describe Turbo overall, I think if I had to assign a word to it, or like two words, it would be growing pains. Because like the show, like obviously is trying to grow, it's trying to do different things, but like it just can't detach itself from stuff from the past just yet. So like there's obviously momentum for them to do different things. Like we'll get into In Space here, you know, where like I really feel like the show took off from there and abandoned a lot of stuff that Turbo was still clinging on to.
So hear me out, right? So. And I hate to say this, but no. They absolutely could have. They just didn't. If they had had this three-part of focus on introducing Diva Tox and the graduation, right? And throughout this three-parter, have Lara go in the command center being like, hey, there's some stuff happening. I might be able to help you get home. And then have the next couple of episodes after that be Zordon's decision and him leaving. It would have worked perfectly.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I completely agree. Instead, it's like, hey, we have to get this done by like, let's go. And
yeah,
it felt a bit like,
if you'll pardon me referencing another franchise, it felt like a bit like when Stephen Moffat took over Doctor Who and literally everything about the show changed. The interior of the TARDIS, the exterior of the TARDIS, the Daleks got redesigned, the Doctor changed, mm-hmm. the band changed. Like, everything changed. And that's
except for Murray Gold.
Yeah. And that's how it feels like here. Everything got changed, but Ron Wasserman, sort of like...
Oh my God. Yeah, wow. What a parallel.
Speaking of which, theme song, banger.
Wasserman.
Cannot wait for him to show up. And well, okay. Anyways, that's gonna be dated. So, but yeah. I wanted to move on to the next question, which was, so Diva Tox's main goal in the second half of these episodes is to close the wormhole, that Alpha and Zordon will use to leave by any means necessary because they are coming through it. It is revealed they are Zordon's replacement, Demetria of the planet Icarus, who is accompanied by Alpha 6, a new version of the Alpha robots that speaks in a yo-yo-yo faux Brooklyn accent or otherwise. Demetria is the embodiment of good, the yin to Diva Tox's yang of being the embodiment of evil, and she only speaks in questions. Thoughts on Zordon's replacement? I don't like her.
But I think it's unfair, all things considered, it is unfair at present to judge what that will look like the rest of the season. But just because she only has like a 30 seconds of dialogue, but it's already annoying because she couldn't come out and say, yes, I am Inquirus, I'm your new mentor, or whatever. She's like, but do you know who you are? And they're like, well, we're the Power Rangers. Like, is your worth not more than the powers you possess? And I'm like, oh, God.
So, yeah, like. You're gonna make me eat quinoa or something, aren't you? Like, just stop.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah, about that casting call, we're completely cool with it at this point now. Because I don't have to deal with Demetra after that.
I do not like her. Like, I do not like her, Sam I Am. I do not like her in the tube. I do not like her something too. I can't rhyme right now. Alpha 6 is annoying as hell. Like Sasha said, like she was only on screen for 30 seconds. I was like, I already hate her. it's an interesting, like, don't get me wrong. I think it's an interesting character idea, but like, if those 30 seconds are gonna indicate like anything about the season moving forward, like I'm not looking forward to any scenes involving her, which
I think what would have worked well with this concept is if she helped facilitate the Rangers to figure it out in their own way, really mentor them to find their own solutions and conclusions and offer assistance where it was needed. But instead, it's like working with the Riddler, who will never give you a straight answer.
Oh, God.
Right? So that is like, it's like a quirk that is ultimately unnecessary. If we wanted a more hands-off mentor, by all means, that's fine. She shouldn't just give them the answer to problems they can easily solve themselves because they're well-experienced Rangers. But it's the constant questions that are just very irritating.
Why?
Exactly.
But like looking at it from a behind the scenes perspective, because they have Carol Hoyt playing the character of Demetria as well, it and knowing that Hillary Shepherd was going to come back during the series as Diva Talks, it was probably also a good move of Faith behind the scenes to say, hey, you're coming in, stepping into this role temporarily to fill in while Hillary's out having a kid. We're going to give you this other role here, so when Hillary does come back, you're guaranteed to remain on the show. So I think in that perspective, it's like, okay, you did somebody right behind the scenes, at least.
Right.
But it doesn't explain how the character still sucks.
That's the issue here. No one has an issue with, you know, the actress having a dual role. And I guess there is some hints later on. I remember from like someone else's review way back when that like there were hints that the two had been sisters or Diva, which is why Diva Talks hates Demetria and whatever. Their names both start with a D. It's a whole thing. But it's never really elaborated on, which is unfortunate. And we'll get more to this, I guess, when we discuss the end of the season. But the like, I'm glad they gave her another role so that she could stay on. But why couldn't they have tweaked the character to be less annoying?
Oh, no, I definitely agree with that. But it's like, I'm just stating behind the scenes stuff. That's really all. I can't really talk on the character on TV because y'all already took care of that one.
Fair enough. Any more on her or
are we good?
All right, final question and then we'll start wrapping this up. So Justin is implied to be a genius and gets accepted to Angel Grove High School just as the other four Rangers are finally graduating. Not considering what we know will happen later in the season, is this a weird story decision to have our main cast finally graduating while we put someone literally in their freshman year? Does this hold the story back and not allow us to move forward in the other Rangers' lives? And is Justin getting into high school at a young age an attempt at getting another Billy type as a Blue Ranger?
Yes.
Yes, but... so is it a little bit strange? Yes. Was it kind of hinted at even in like way... Like I think... Where was it? Was it in here or the Turbo movie where actually has to take the exam?
Here. It was here.
It was here? Okay. Things have, you know... have mixed a little bit
already. Yeah.
There's a lot that happened. So I saw it coming a mile away, but this works and makes sense because of what happens later. And I think when we have the switch to the other Rangers, it puts them in high school with Justin. So you don't have to, it makes sense from a narrative perspective to keep everybody more or less in one place. So that you're not dealing with like, oh, we have to go get Justin from the middle school across town or wherever it might be. Justin isn't Billy, though. And oh, God, they do make him a little bit, you know, he only skips really like, what, one grade? Maybe two? Because he's like, is he 12 or 13?
He's 12.
Okay, so fine. So he skips like two grades, maybe one and a half. So he's smart, but he's not, it's fine. I think it's an interesting twist on the genius story. It does kind of get us back to the smart Blue Ranger trope, which is fine. And like I said, when we have a new team of Rangers, it puts them in the same place as Justin. But then how much of this season actually takes place during the summer versus the start of the new school year? Because right now we're like in May because they've just graduated.
I wouldn't know until we watch the rest of the season because literally.
So that is the question. We will find out as we move on through the season.
Does the Justin thing hold the season back? Yes, sure. Like, I'm of the opinion that Justin as a whole holds the season back. Like, his mere existence holds the season back. Because, again, this should have been a season about moving forward and evolving and the Rangers growing. Instead, it's a season where a 12-year-old is introduced who's clearly a genius. The thing that annoys the heck out of me about that whole situation is there's a scene where he's about to take the entrance exam where Kat's like, wow, he must be behind all the other kids because he's moved around a lot. Okay, first of all, if he was behind all the other kids, why is he taking a high school entrance exam? Second of all, you are the people who know him better than literally anyone else on the planet. You would know this kid is a genius. And third, he didn't move around a lot because in the Turbo movie, he was in an orphanage.
Well, they don't really answer the question of whether or not it's an orphanage or not, but even though his dad's alive and around. But so the entrance exam could have just been a regular entrance exam. It didn't necessarily have to be a high school one, even though, yes, it is administered by Miss Applebaum. It's entirely possible that she was the teacher that volunteered to administer the exam.
You mean Appleby?
Whatever. That character is so important. I have to remember their name.
Hang on a minute. She's overseeing an entrance exam during graduation?
Yeah.
That's actually not that unusual if it's a new kid that moves to a town or because they've already retconned Justin's existence. So it's not ridiculous to have a new child in the town and having to take a placement exam.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that's the weird part. I'm saying the fact that the placement exam is taking place during graduation.
Well, technically before.
Also, I would just... And this is a question for those of you that went to school in the United States. Is it normal for students to be the ones setting up graduation?
Yes.
To some extent, yes.
Really?
It really depends, though.
So what it is, and I can only speak on my school, but like the student board is the ones, especially like the seniors, they're the ones that kind of set a lot of things up. And there's student volunteers that help do things because... I know for my high school graduation, at least the rehearsal, because I actually didn't go to my actual one, there were actually students that were actually naming or like announcing the student as they're going up to grab their diploma or their high school diploma.
Yeah,
and stuff
it did
like
not
that.
Happen in my high school.
Whereas normally it would be like a principal or a high ranking staff member or something like that who would normally do it at other ones. I don't know. Like, but I know for mine, there is a lot of student involvement in the graduation, at least for mine.
So the answer is it really depends on the state you live in. Because all
county.
States have their, or county even. So for my high school graduation, we had some student involvement. I think student government was like our class president, whatever was involved with certain things. Because you have to like help make the schedule and like who's giving the speeches and all that. But we did also have student volunteers who were like the pallbearers, quote unquote, who had like this weird staff thing. And I would like try to it helped to organize the students because they would go up row by row to get their diplomas. Mm-hmm. It helped kind of avoid a lot of the chaos. But we also had like a much bigger graduating class than Angel Grove High. We had like 169 kids, something like that.
I think I had something around 200.
Totally normal for the students to be the ones putting out the chairs and
Yeah.
hanging the signs.
You'll have some kind of volunteers. Well, it might not be the graduating class, necessarily. It could be like underclassmen helping to set things up as well. But yeah, it's not unusual.
It also depends on the venue that you use. Like for mine, it was at Dark Constitution Hall and stuff like that. Yeah. So there was no setup in that regards because we're using a legitimate Constitution Hall.
Yeah.
So
we were at my school. We went to this giant like I can't even remember like, but it wasn't actually at the school. And it was kind of like very much the way that like Sasha and Mike were saying, it's like, you know, yeah, the students help out. Ben, I'm curious, not to like, you know, derail the podcast, but like, what was that like in the UK?
Wait, our podcast getting derailed? No.
You don't do graduation in the UK.
You don't have some kind of completion ceremony?
Nope.
What?
So what happens in the UK is you do school from like the age of 6 through 14, right? And then at the age of 14, you get to choose your electives, right? Usually it's an art, a science, a language, and a couple of other electives, right? Depending on what your school offers, right? Like some schools may offer like home economics, some schools may offer drama, some schools may offer like computer technology or whatever it's called now, because I graduated, but I left school. Hang on. Now, bear in mind, I did this 30 odd years ago, so it may have changed since then. and I've been in the States since 2003, so it may have changed since then. You literally take like zero exams until your last year of school, where you take you take English, maths, you take three science exams. So you take maths, you take three science exams, you take English literature, English language, and then you take two or three exams for each of your electives. So you take a grand total of about, I'd say 14, 15 exams, right? You take those once halfway through your final year as your test exams. And then at the end of your final year, you take all of those again, each of those exams lasting about 3 hours, right?
Oof.
And that is all the testing you ever got, right? You don't get to build up credit towards graduation. You don't get extra credit. You can't do any of that. You pass your exams or you fail your exams. And then there is a day where everyone gets mailed their exam results and you're done. Sometimes on the last day of school, you'll have like a, we're not doing any work today, let's have a pizza kind of thing. But there's no huge ceremony. There's no gowns. There's no caps. Like you do that when you get to like university, right? When you've gone through college, you do that. But for regular school, nah.
I mean, what's funnier is that like, you know, you just kind of explain like the whole process for UK. Like over here, you have like ceremonies for getting out of preschool to go to kindergarten, and then like going from like elementary school to middle school, and middle school to high school, and then it's like it's like everything's a milestone.
I mean, I'll be honest. I think any graduate, like high school graduation, I can see as a ceremony. Anything before that makes no sense to me. But anyway,
The UK way of doing things may have changed since I went through it.
Yeah.
But like, the big thing a lot of people outside of the UK don't realize, or should I say, most Americans don't realize, is that in the UK, there's no building up credit towards graduation, right? You don't get scored per semester. You get one set of exams when you're 16 that contribute to the rest of your life. If you fail them, you have to take 3 years out of your life and retake those exams, or just go get an on-school job. You can't get into college in the UK and go do general studies, English, maths, right? In England, if you haven't got English, math, science at a certain level, you don't get through the door of a college. Every single class you do in college is based on what you want to learn. You pick a subject and you are learning it from day one to the end of your 4 years, 60 hours a week. There's no electives. You don't pick a major and a minor like 2 years into your course. Like, if you don't know the stuff, you don't get in. So if you don't pass your exams, you can't get into college.
I hate to cut this off here, but otherwise this podcast will be like three hours long.
We got the gist. So wait. This podcast doesn't get derailed? I would never know.
Right, but this is a weird kind of derailment.
Brian opened the floodgates. Okay, or Ben opened the floodgates in this one. This was all Ben asking about U.S. education system and graduation customs.
No. Okay. I didn't ask about the U.S. education system. I merely asked if it was normal for students to create, to set up
graduation. The answer is yes. Let's go back to Power Rangers.
Because we see the Rangers doing that.
Yes.
And to me, that was weird, right?
And then Brian asked about the U.K. education system. So, Brian, this is your fault.
I know. I'm sorry. My question has something to do with
the episode. Thank you very much.
So that's actually all the questions I had. If you wanted to add anything else to this episode, by all means, if you had anything else you wanted to talk about, feel free.
I have a couple of things. Stasha, go ahead.
So the Zord fights.
Quote unquote fights.
Yeah. There is a lot of time wasted for Sentai footage for them to not be able to put the Zord together. You know, it's like they're struggling. And Tommy's like, let me do this. Oh, wait, let me check the manual.
Yeah.
Like,
they formed the Megazord in the movie.
Right.
Hey, listen. It's been 3 weeks. They've been preoccupied with things.
Tommy's been busy racing cars to understand how cars work.
So a few things. Larigo can talk now?
I mean, he kind of forms some kind of words in the movie.
Yeah. Baby good, baby big.
There's a section where Tommy is running with a bomb and they put it on some kind of go-kart and drive it away.
Yeah.
It must have blown up in the abandoned warehouse district.
Probably.
Or the quarry. Why is
he running with a bomb? They can teleport things.
Yeah.
Because we needed our Batman 66 moment.
We need a new toy for kids to buy. We need a new toy for kids to buy. I love the fact that this little go-kart that Zordon sends has a convenient place to put the bomb.
And it's coincidentally all of their Ranger colors put together, which makes me think in the Sentai, it's like a combination of their weapons or something. But anyway.
Maybe. I have not seen Car Ranger yet.
There's a moment where Bulk and Skull are like, the only way we're ever going to get back on the Force is if we write 50 parking tickets. And it made me think, what if there aren't 50 traffic violations? And then it's not the only way. Because seconds later, Lieutenant Stone sends them to the power plant. And at no point do they just go, hey, Lieutenant Stone, you know how we're in Angel Grove and there's like weird stuff that happens here all the time? There's a flying submarine behind you. You should really look at that. They just go, bip, 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 bip. And my last thing is, where did Elgar get all those cool cars? At the end, there's all those like cars.
I mean, in the 3 weeks between the movie and the show, Elgar got inspired by the Zords and decided to put something together. Right,
but you would think that would be something they would say for later. Be like, oh, now Devotox has got our own fleet of Zords.
Nah. Yeah.
Also, who was piloting the other cars? Also, Do we ever see those again?
No, I don't think so.
Probably not. It's probably Sentai footage that they like just were like, we're not going to utilize this. When Tommy, by the way, has the manual in that shot, I have seen the Sentai footage of that, and like, it gets even more bizarre because you know how like the head shows up and it like distracts Elgar? Like the head actually starts talking to like Elgar's counterpart in that, and it's like super weird. And then like I think like because they do an edit where Elgar like hits the rock and then he's just like, oh, I'm okay though. And like they don't do that in the Sentai. They're just like, okay, he's gone for now. He'll show back up later. But like also- it just speaks to me that like in America, like on Power Rangers, it's like nobody really dies, they just get really big boo-boos.
Yep. It's a kid's show. Can't have characters die or talk about genocide or things.
Is it me or did the Elgar in the car look different?
Yes, he looked different. Probably because...
Why?
Probably because, you know, those suits can kind of get messed up, especially on the way over, like on the boat from Japan or whatever. But like, I don't know. I noticed it like too.
The Elgar in the suit just it had a different facial structure. The Elgar in the like the big Zord car had like a different facial structure. It's thinner and like pointier.
There is a note about this in the Ranger Wiki.
Oh, really?
It says Elgar's appearance changes depending on which footage is used. US footage shows Elgar as a little goofy looking, while Sentai footage shows a more evil face. This parallels the difference between Zalmonda and Elgar's personalities. Oh, I guess there was like a secondary personality between Elgar. Elgar's running gag is ruining his Aunt Divatox's plans, making him look comically idiotic, while Zalmonda's ruthlessness was emphasized. For one scene in Turbo Rangers the movie, when Adam and Elgar fight briefly, the original mask is used instead of the American one. This is just notes. I didn't read the whole wiki. So I'm guessing it's either because he has a dual personality in the Sentai, or because they had a separate mask and just made him look less scary.
Oh, just the guy in the Sentai is scary and the guy in the Power Rangers.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, that answers my question. I'm done.
I mean, it makes sense, so.
I have another question. And it's
okay.
We're back to them trying to put the Zord together. There is a scene where Kat is like freaking out and she takes her hands off the steering wheel. And I'm just like, yep, that'll help you. Like, you're trying to stabilize this vehicle. Why are you taking your hands off the wheel?
Because she wants to start a car accident.
I do like the fact that her way out of that is to split her Zord in half.
Yeah.
Because that's how she becomes the Orange. Well, that was a really clever little
thing. Yeah.
I like little stuff like that. I was about to make like a, I said it briefly, but I was about to make a Jesus take the wheel joke, but whatever. But
bear drive car.
Why bear drive car? Oh my God. I don't know. I thought these episodes were, you know, all right. But if anybody else wants to, I think we could start wrapping things up.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, fantastic. All right, so Sasha, where can we find you on the World Wide Web?
You can find me over on Twitter and Instagram at Geeky Kaplan. That is Kaplan with a K after the greatest superhero in the Marvel Universe. Fight me, Billy Kaplan. Shut up, Ben.
Mike, where can we find you, sir?
Twitch at twitch.tv/michaelx75. Twitter at the Lindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, and everything is on the website txhdhockey.com.
All right, and then I'll save Ben for last. You can find me on Twitter at Wondering Geek. You can also find me on TikTok at BlueRangerB_Rye. You can find me doing all the beer stuff with Castwave Studios at castwavestudios.com. And you can also find us on YouTube at Castwave Studios. Check it out today. Ben, take the floor, sir.
You can find me on Twitter at
Bob T. Goldfish.
Find me doing the video game thing with my good friend Jordan Johnson and my wife Amy Child over at
twitch.tv/321_TV.
And you can find Voices from the Grid's sister show, Awesome Mania, the watch along podcast where myself, Mike, our friend Matt, and sometimes we have a guest, are watching along with pay per views of wrestling from the year 1998 and sort of riffing with them. You can find that over at
xhdhockey.com/x95production/awesomemania.
Or just go to the website and use the drop down.
Everything's always on the website.
Yep.
Fantastic.
What website?
Yep. And and I guess for us, the yeah. show in general, we have a link tree. It's link tree and then just at @VFTG_PR. It has links to everything. Twitter, Google Podcasts, Spotify, website directly to the archive, so you can go to the archives and listen mm-hmm. to all the episodes anytime y'all want.
All right. So, with that being said, Ben, take us out, please.
Well, this is usually where I'd make some sort of pithy sum up of the last however long we've been recording for. However, I will merely say that I'm coughing a lot for some reason. I will merely say that if Shift into Turbo is anything to judge by, oh boy, we're in for a ride. And we will leave you, as we always do, by saying, guys, gals, non-binary pals, and all those beyond that spectrum. In the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. And party on, my friends.
And until our next More Phenomenal episode, be sure to grab your turbo morphers and your turbo keys. Shift into turbo.
Sure, I guess you take my line on that one, but okay.
Oh, sorry about that.
Later, y'all.
Sasha?
The Rangers couldn't find pointy ears at a Star Trek convention.